Chapter 6. The Widow and the Wife. When Dorothea had been at Freshett Hall for a week, Celia told her about the new part of Mr. Casaubon's will. Dorothea blushed deeply, then went pale. The news seemed to make everything different. Her husband had kept secret his true feelings. She had never thought of Will Ladislaw as a possible lover. Now she knew that her husband had thought of him in that light, and she wondered if Will himself had done so. Celia did not notice how much the news had distressed Dorothea. She continued playing with the baby and talking.
"I never liked Mr. Casaubon, Dodo, and neither did Sir James. Now that he's gone, you should try to enjoy life more."
Just then Lydgate came in.
"How are you, Mrs. Casaubon? You look ill. Has something distressed you?"
Celia said.
"She wants to go to Lowick to look at her husband's papers. I don't think she should go. Do you?"
"I think Mrs. Casaubon should do exactly what she wants to do," replied Lydgate.
"Thank you,"
said Dorothea.
"I get anxious sitting here, doing nothing. There is so much for me to do at Lowick."
Then she began to cry. Before he left Freshett Hall, Lydgate asked to see Sir James.
"Let Mrs. Casaubon do as she likes," he said. "She needs perfect freedom."
Dorothea went to Lowick and looked through all Mr. Casaubon's papers. When she saw her husband's instructions for the publication of The Key to All Mythologies, she wrote a note to him and locked it in her desk.
"I couldn't follow these instructions. Don't you see now that I couldn't submit my soul to yours by working hopelessly at something I don't believe in? Dorothea."
Now there was no living man for Dorothea to pity. Besides, she now knew that Mr. Casaubon had been secretive and suspicious. She wished that she could renounce the property he had left her in his will, but she felt that property was a responsibility that she should not ignore. For 3 months, Dorothea stayed at Freshett Hall, but made frequent visits to Lowick. During that time, the elections were held. Despite Ladislaw's hard work, Mr. Brooke lost the election. His reputation as a bad landlord had made him many enemies in Middlemarch. He decided to give up politics and sell the newspaper. Shortly after the election, Dorothea moved back to Lowick.
"She will get depressed living alone in that miserable house,"
said Mrs. Cadwallader.
"She really should get married again as soon as possible."
The real reason for Dorothea's return to Lowick was her deep desire to see Will Ladislaw. One morning, she was sitting in the drawing-room looking out of the window when Tantrip entered and said,
"Mr. Ladislaw is here, madam."
"Bring him in, please,"
said Dorothea. When Will walked into the drawing-room, Dorothea blushed deeply. She felt that this meeting, which she had wanted so much, was too difficult. Both of them were nervous and agitated.
"I am leaving Middlemarch,"
said Will.
"I wanted to say goodbye to you. I hope you don't mind me coming here."
"I'm glad you came. Are you leaving Middlemarch immediately?"
"Very soon. I'm going to study law in London. I like political work and I want to be qualified to do it. Other men have won honourable positions for themselves without the help of family connections and money."
"That makes it all the more honourable,"
said Dorothea.
"My uncle says you speak in public very well, and that you care about justice for everyone. I'm so glad. When we were in Rome, I thought you only cared for poetry and art."
"So you think I should go away from here and stay away for years, until I've succeeded in some profession?"
She did not answer immediately. She looked out of the window at the roses in the garden. She assumed that Will had heard about Mr. Casaubon's mean action, she thought.
"He never felt anything but friendship for me."
Finally, she replied,
"Yes, I'll be happy to hear that you have found a profession. But you must be patient. It could take a long time."
Her voice trembled a little.
"You'll forget about me,"
said Will.
"No. I'll never forget you,"
she said, smiling. Will blushed and leapt up.
"Good God!"
he cried passionately. He looked almost angry. He wanted to tell her that he loved her, but he could not.
Others will think I want her money,
he said to himself.
I won't let them think that. And I'm afraid of what she might think.
Just then, Sir James arrived.
I must say goodbye, Mrs. Casaubon,
said Will, and bowing to Sir James, he left quickly. Rosamond was expecting a baby. Lydgate was very glad to hear the news, although it meant more expenses. He was finding married life very expensive indeed. Rosamond liked everything to be the best. He told Rosamond that she should stop horse riding now that she was expecting a baby, but Rosamond was used to doing what she liked. In June, Lydgate's cousin came to stay with them. Rosamond was very pleased to have a baronet's son as her guest. Captain Lydgate was very attentive to Rosamond and paid her many compliments. It gave Rosamond great pleasure to be admired by other men as well as her husband. Fortunately, Tertius was not a jealous husband, and often he left her alone with the captain.
Why don't you talk to the captain more?
Asked Rosamond one day when they were alone.
Because, my dear Rosie, the man's a fool,
replied Lydgate.
Ask Ladislaw what he thinks of the captain. He's almost stopped visiting us ever since that man came here.
Rosamond thought she knew why Mr. Ladislaw disliked the captain. He was jealous. This thought pleased her very much. One day, the captain asked Rosamond to go riding with him. Rosamond agreed to go. She did not tell her husband, but she enjoyed it so much that she told him afterwards. She said she planned to go again the following day. Lydgate was furious.
You shouldn't have gone riding, and you won't do it again, Rosie,
he said firmly. It was a statement, not a question, and therefore required no reply from Rosamond. She was pleased that she had not made a promise. The next day she went out with Captain Lydgate again. Rosamond's horse was frightened by the sound of a falling tree, and she was frightened too. She became ill and lost the baby. In all future conversations on the subject, Rosamond was certain that horse riding had made no difference.
If I'd stayed at home, I would have lost the baby anyway,
she said.
Poor darling,
said Lydgate. But he was amazed at the terrible tenacity of this delicate creature. He felt he had no power over her. Affection did not make her obedient. She did whatever she liked. Soon Rosamond was in good health again and looking as lovely as ever. Lydgate stopped worrying about her and returned to other worries. He was very deeply in debt. He could not ask his father-in-law for help. Mr. Vincey had money troubles of his own. Lydgate decided to tell Rosamond about their debts. It was clear to him that they had to live more modestly from now on. Rosamond liked to give parties, and everything she bought was of the very best. He had to explain to her that they must economize. One evening, Lydgate said,
Rosie, I've something unpleasant to tell you. We're in debt. If we don't live more modestly, we'll get more and more into debt as time goes on.
Rosamond was silent for a few moments. Finally, she looked at him and replied,
What can I do, Tertius?
For a moment, Lydgate remembered when Dorothea, speaking of her sick husband, had used almost the same words, but with such a very different meaning.
Help me. Tell me what I can do. He has been working all his life. He cares about nothing else. And I care about nothing else.
Lydgate felt sad. Rosamond's reply had sounded so distant, so indifferent. But she was not indifferent. She'd spent her life dreaming of beautiful things. The idea that she could not have the things she wanted shocked and distressed her. Tears came into her eyes.
I'm sorry, Rosie. It's all my fault,
said Lydgate.
We must leave Middlemarch,
said Rosamond.
Let's go to London.
We can go nowhere without money,
Lydgate replied.
Your uncle will help us.
No, Rosie. You must take my judgment on things you don't understand. I don't expect any help from my uncle, and I won't ask him for help.
Rosamond sat perfectly still.
We'll have to return some of the silver to the shop where we bought it,
said Lydgate.
I hope that we will not have to sell the furniture and the house, but that too may happen if we are not careful. Come, darling. Try not to worry. We can solve these problems.
Ever since Raffles had told him the name of Sarah Dunkirk's husband, Mr. Bulstrode had been wondering what he should do. For days he thought about Raffles and about the sins in his own past. Finally he wrote a letter to Will Ladislaw asking him to come to the Shrubs that evening. Will was not surprised to receive this invitation. He assumed Bulstrode wanted to talk about some business to do with the election.
"I invited you here, Mr. Ladislaw,"
began Bulstrode,
"to discuss a very private matter. I have a confession to make to you. I make it only because I will be judged by God. Human law cannot touch me."
Ladislaw had always been sensitive on the question of the honour of his family. He was now afraid of what Bulstrode might tell him.
"Is it true that your mother's name was Sarah Dunkirk, and that she ran away from her family to become an actress?"
"Yes,"
replied Will.
"Do you know anything about your mother's family?"
"No."
"Sarah Dunkirk's mother became my wife," said Bulstrode. "She was rich, and when she died she left all her money to me, because she couldn't find her daughter. Is your mother still alive?"
"No,"
said Will, standing up as if to leave. He felt suddenly angry. He did not want to have any connection with this man.
"Please sit down, Mr. Ladislaw,"
said Bulstrode anxiously.
"I wish to compensate you, to give you the inheritance your mother never received. I am not obliged to do this by law. I am doing it merely as an act of conscience."
"Did you know where to find my mother?"
said Will. Bulstrode turned pale. He'd not expected his generous offer to be met in this way.
"Yes, I did. But now I'm penitent and wish to do the right thing before God. I assume that you will accept my offer, Mr. Ladislaw."
Will looked at him angrily.
"Before I reply, I want to know what my grandmother's business was and why my mother ran away from home."
"It was a shop,"
said Bulstrode nervously.
"A pawnbroker's shop. Sarah thought that it was a dishonourable business. That's why she ran away from home."
"She was right,"
cried Will.
"It is a dishonourable business."
Bulstrode blushed with anger. He had been prepared for humiliation, but this was too much. This young man, who he had hoped to help, was acting like a judge.
"My honour is important to me,"
said Will.
"And now I find that there is dishonour in my family. My mother ran away from it, and so will I. I refuse your offer. Good night, sir."
As the weeks passed, Lydgate's money worries got worse, and the possibility of being forced to sell the house and the furniture grew more and more likely. Poor Rosamond had found marriage very disappointing. Before they were married, she had seen Lydgate as a romantic stranger. She had thought,
"If I marry him, he'll make my life delightful."
But in fact, married life was not delightful. It was full of everyday details that were not what she had wished and hoped. His scientific studies seemed to her a sinister vampire's occupation. She felt that her husband had managed things badly, and she thought that her own judgment was superior to his. Until he'd left the neighbourhood 4 months before, Ladislaw's company had been pleasant and exciting for her. But now he was gone. Rosamond felt bored without him. She dreamed of an invitation to Sir Godwin Lydgate's house. She dreamed of a life in London with no money worries. Finally, she decided to take action. Without telling her husband, she wrote a letter to Sir Godwin, explaining their troubles and asking for help. A week later, Lydgate came into the drawing room with a letter in his hand. His face was pale with anger.
"I can't live with you if you're always doing things I ask you not to do,"
he cried, handing her the letter. Rosamond, too, changed colour as she read.
"Dear Tertius, don't get your wife to write to me when you want something. I thought you had more dignity than that. I cannot give you £1,000 or even half that sum. My own family uses up all my money. I've always wished you well, but now you must consider yourself completely independent from me. Your affectionate uncle, Godwin Lydgate."
This is not the first time this has happened, Rosamond,
said Lydgate angrily.
Time and time again I have expressed a wish, you have seemed to accept my wish, and then you have secretly disobeyed me.
Rosamond sat in silence, waiting for his anger to pass. No argument could persuade her that she had done something wrong. In her own view, she was the innocent victim of unpleasant circumstances. Lydgate thought of their future together.
She will stop loving me,
he thought.
How sad our life together will be then.
Finally, she looked at him with tears in her eyes.
I only tried to help,
she said gently.
It's very hard to be disgraced here among all the people we know, and to live in such a miserable way. I wish I had died with the baby.
Her gentle tears and words touched Lydgate's heart. He put his arm around her.
It is much more difficult for her than it is for me,
he thought.
She has no life outside the home, as I have.
He wished to excuse her everything if he could, but to excuse her was also to think of her as another and weaker species. Nevertheless, she had mastered him. Will's departure for Middlemarch had been delayed, but now, after his meeting with Bulstrode, he finally prepared to leave. Then he remembered that he had left some of his sketches at Tipton Grange. He rode out to get them on his last day in Middlemarch. That morning, Dorothea went to Freshett Hall to see Celia and Sir James. Mrs. Cadwallader was there too, repeating all the gossip she had heard in Middlemarch.
Everyone is talking about Mr. Ladislaw,
she said.
He spends all his time singing with Mrs. Lydgate while her husband is at work.
That is not true,
cried Dorothea.
Or at least, it is a misrepresentation. I do not want to hear people speaking evil of Mr. Ladislaw. He has already suffered too much injustice.
As she spoke, she blushed deeply, and her lips began to tremble. Then, calming herself, she stood up.
Anyway,
she said,
I must leave now. I'm going to Tipton Grange. Goodbye.
As she drove along in the carriage, the world seemed suddenly ugly and horrible. Her eyes filled with tears.
It's not true,
she cried, although she could not forget the day she had found Will with Mrs. Lydgate and heard his voice accompanied by the piano. When she got to Tipton Grange, the servant told her that her uncle was out, but Mr. Ladislaw was in the library. Dorothea entered the library, shook his hand, and sat down.
I'm very glad to see you,
she said.
I thought you had left Middlemarch weeks ago.
Her voice trembled a little.
After our last meeting, I discovered things that have changed my plans for the future,
said Will.
When I last saw you, I thought I might come back some day. But now, I don't think I ever shall.
Did you want to tell me the reasons?
She asked timidly.
Yes,
Will replied.
Since I said goodbye to you, I found out about Mr. Casaubon's will. It's a terrible insult. I'm not a fortune hunter. There was no need to protect you from me. The fact you are rich was protection enough.
I know,
said Dorothea. He walked to the window. She rose and came up to him there, but he turned and walked to another part of the room. Dorothea was hurt by this. He seemed no longer to like and trust her, as he had always done in the past.
I must go,
he said.
I must go and live somewhere else without happiness or hope. What I care for more than anything else is forbidden to me. I don't just mean forbidden to me by others. I mean forbidden to me by my own pride and honour. I'll go on living like a man who has seen heaven in a dream.
Dorothea could not be sure that he was talking about his relation with her. Perhaps he was talking about his relation with Mrs. Lydgate. Perhaps he was confiding in her as a friend. Will was not surprised by her silence. He longed for an assurance that she loved him, but he knew she could not say so, even if it were true. They shook hands, and he walked towards the door.
Please remember me,
said Dorothea with a sob in her voice.
Why do you say that?
Asked Will, irritated.
I'm in danger of forgetting everything else.
And he walked out of the room. Dorothea sat down. Her heart was beating fast. He loved her. Now she knew it for certain. She was filled with joy. At that moment, it was easier to say goodbye. The knowledge of loving and being loved made her forget her sadness and feel strong.